Good morning. I'm Brett Stewart. I'm going to talk today about what's going on in the international markets. Now, we've talked, and every year we talk about what's happening and how significant these markets are to the U.S. ag sector. And I would tell you, every year I feel that temperature rising. We're really seeing it today in the grains markets. The international markets have become a key driver of what's going on in the grains. And my opinion is that beef isn't very far behind. Just start now, let's take a look at these currency indexes. And I bring this up because I get a lot of questions about the dollar. Every time we see the dollar shift, people ask me, are we going to lose exports because the dollar's rising? Now, I'd tell you, the green line here is the U.S. dollar index. That's the index we all know and follow. The red line, now don't be confused, this is the U.S. dollar in relation to those four currencies. So as that line has dropped, the U.S. dollar has dropped against Mexico, Canada, Japan, and South Korean currencies. And the reason I follow that is this U.S. dollar index is 60% European currencies. The U.S. dollar index does not include the peso. It does not include the yuan. And so be careful when you make judgments about trade based on that dollar index. You can see there over the last year that we have gained competitiveness overseas slightly with that dollar. But on a historical basis, if you run correlations between U.S. beef exports and dollar rates, it's a very, very poor correlation. Now, the one correlation that is very good historically is per capita income. In fact, the one key variable over time trying to predict U.S. exports of beef is per capita income in Japan. That's the long-term best historical variable to forecast. I show you this chart, and you look at this as an annual change in per capita incomes in these countries. Now, you look there, and it isn't fantastic or shiny, but you can sure see the recession there, the global recession, in 2009 and where we're at in 2010 and 2011. And my main point here is look at those spots for 2011 and look at where they relate compared to the last 10 years before the recession. We're largely on track around the globe in terms of per capita income. That's very good news for beef trade. You can see some of those countries struggle, some of them higher. U.S. is a little bit of a laggard. And we sit here in the U.S. with a cloud over our head in this recession and say, how can we possibly push beef prices higher to consumers? Well, it's pretty easy to push those beef prices higher to consumers in Korea, where Randy showed you their stock market's up 24% over the last year. We're no longer a U.S. business. We're exporting roughly 10% of our production today. But I would tell you the price impact of that 10% is much larger than the 10% volume. World beef production continues to contract. 2011 will be the fourth consecutive year of global beef production declines. This is a major factor weighing on us, not just today, but as we go forward. We all know the biology, the life cycle of increasing production. In cattle, we're looking at almost 3 years from the decision to keep those heifers to when we have more beef. This will not correct quickly. The hog guys, the poultry guys, they can turn the lever higher, push it ahead, and away they go. We're going to see very tight global beef supplies moving forward. This is yet to correct. Inflation is the result of those tighter supplies. This is the global price paid for U.S. meat. And so that beef price, you can see they're up 8%. On average, everybody around the globe buying U.S. beef paid 8% more for it last year than they did the year before. Now, the fourth quarter of last year was very different than the first three quarters. The fourth quarter would show that much higher. But look at pork. U.S. pork, the prices paid overseas for U.S. pork increased 20% last year. This is just an indication of what's going on out there in the global marketplace. As consumers, population's growing, incomes are growing, and supplies are very, very tight. In terms of a global trade business, U.S. beef or global beef exports, this isn't just the U.S., this is all combined beef exports around the world. This is almost a $35 billion business today. And look at where it's come from. 2001, it was about a $10 billion business. This business is growing very rapidly. It's been driven by technology, the ability to move refrigerated meats all over the globe. This will continue to grow. There are big countries that are very inefficient at producing beef, and they're going to produce less beef and import more beef. That trend will continue to grow. The real question is how do we really position to take full advantage of that $2.5 billion a year that's growing in beef trade? If we look at import data to judge inflation, you can see here these countries, this is the average price hike they had on beef in 2010. I didn't have the year-end data, so it was just year-to-date based on their customs agencies, what they'd reported through. In the U.S., we paid 14% more for our imported beef last year than the year before. But go down that list and take a look at the Middle East, look at Asia. Egypt, the highest number on there, paid 30% more for beef last year, all imported beef, all sources, than they did the year before. Is that a big red flag? You know, the Egyptians told us 2 months ago that they were about 1 million birds a day short of what they need for poultry. Bread prices went crazy 2 months ago, and where are they now? They're burning cars in the streets. This isn't over. There's potential for food riots to continue to escalate, and as long as we have grain prices where they're at, we're going to have tight meat supplies, and we're going to have very high food inflation. The IMF Food Inflation Index for 2010 is up 28%, the Food Inflation Index. Last year, 28% for global food. There are consumers that are going to feel that a lot more than we are. Looking at the competitive situation, this just shows in terms of tonnage where the exporters lie and where our competitors are. Brazil increased through most of 2010 there. They were up 4%. Australia down a little bit. Australia's been restocking cattle last year. Probably be a little restocking this year as they begin to climb out of the swamp from the floods that they've had the last quarter. U.S. exports, 17. That was year to date. We're going to be up 18% probably here once we get this new data next week. But look across that. Who's really expanding? Canada, the U.S., India, very small player and totally irrelevant to us. But look at the European countries. They continue to decline. They continue to be bigger importers of beef, and we're going to see that trend continue. In terms of the economics of pricing, this is a global steer price converted into U.S. dollars. It's pretty interesting when you look at that. Our fed steers here, this was January data, were cheaper than Brazilian steers were in Sao Paulo. On a carcass basis, in U.S. dollars, our steers were cheaper than Brazilian steers. Now, you think about that, you can look down and say, yeah, we're more expensive than Argentina, we're more expensive than Uruguay, Australia. But think about the cut composition and think about the premium products that we have in our market. These other countries aren't selling middle meats at the extreme prices we are. And so when you look at our global carcass steer price and we take the value proposition of those middle meats, that makes our end meats extremely competitive. I put this slide up to give you a feel of what our marketplace is and who our competitors are. 75% of our beef exports go to those five countries, nearly three-fourths of our beef exports. If we call those one market, this pie chart shows the market share of that market. Are we concerned about Brazil as a competitor today in our global beef markets? We compete with them 1%. They have 1% of our 75% of our market, virtually our market. Australia is our competitor. Australia is restocking. They've had some issues. The big competition is in Korea and Japan. Our exports to Japan 2010 increased 40%. Our exports to Korea in 2010 increased 94%. As we continue to gain access and see demand grow, we're going to be able to get back some of that key market share away from Australia. Are the Australians concerned? They said, hey, when you guys come to buy Australian beef for grinding beef, we say, here's what we're getting from Uruguay or from Russia, here's what we're getting from Europe, here's what these other guys are paying. You have to step up and meet that. They are no longer dependent on the U.S. as they have been for 20 years in terms of selling their beef. There are a lot of places that Australia sends beef outside of Japan and Korea, and as we displace it there, it'll flow to these third, fourth markets. terms of where we're looking at here for 2011, 2012, we're calling our beef exports this year up 8%. And there are a lot of things real fluid out there in the markets right now. We've got the Korean foot and mouth disease. They've culled a lot of cattle, a lot of hogs. Korea is very aggressively buying beef today from the U.S., booking it, shipping it very aggressively. So I don't know where we land. I think right now a good guess is to dial in about 8% on exports. Imports, we've got them up about 2-2.5% next year. One of the reasons I don't have that number higher is I don't know where we're going to get more supplies. Supplies are going to be tight. We are going to pull very hard on imported beef next year, or through this year and into next year. When you think about that, this is our lean grinding beef. This is our McDonald's beef. This is our Burger King. Fast food hamburgers we're getting from overseas. And there's three key sources to get that lean grinding beef. We get some of it from our trim off our fed cattle slaughter. We get some from cow and bull slaughter. And we use imports to balance the rest. Now, we're seeing our domestic beef cow slaughter start to decline just in the last 4 weeks. I don't know if that's going to bear through the year, but we've had very heavy beef cow slaughter rates the last 3 years. If we see those beef slaughter rates start to decline, where are we going to get the lean grinding beef? We know what our fed slaughter is going to be, roughly. We're going to pull very hard on that imported beef. We're bidding record high prices today for Australian beef. And we're getting some of it, we're not getting some of it. There's a lot of places they can ship it. And so I think we're going to continue to see these trim prices run higher because of the tight supplies from our cull cows, the tight supplies overseas. So just to kind of wrap it up, I mentioned South Korea. I looked at the USDA export sales data yesterday. Korea has outstanding sales, or we have outstanding sales of beef to South Korea last week of about 24,000 tons. That's how much beef they have booked from us that's yet to ship, about 24,000. A year ago, that was about 9,000. This FMD deal has run meat inflation through the roof in Korea. They've slaughtered over, or they've culled over, they aren't slaughtering, they're killing these animals, they're incinerating or deep burying these animals to secure the FMD outbreak. So these animals aren't going through food. They've killed over 2.3 million hogs in South Korea. The cattle numbers are up over 300,000 now. Dairy prices are on the run. Poultry prices, beef, pork. And if you want to take a look, look at like pork shoulder butts. That's a key pork item we send to Korea. They're record high this week. And it's just been a straight run the last 3 weeks on collar butts to Korea. Short rib demand's very high. They're going to be big buyers of U.S. meat, particularly beef and pork, over the first quarter. We may see those pork shipments up 50% in the first quarter to Korea. But just that regional, that's just one spark in the tinderbox here of tight supplies and growing demand. We've got the Russian situation. They've cut their poultry import quota virtually in half. We used to ship about 800,000 tons of poultry to Russia. Our quota this year is going to be about 275,000 tons. So that's a major factor when we look at the whole protein balance sheet. Access is a major issue. Japan, we still remain constrained. We're only shipping about 35% of our pre-BSE volumes to Japan. We're going to be back next year very close to pre-BSE volumes, and we've done it without two-thirds of the Japan market. Now, if we were to get some announcement that things are changing, that we can supply that market at 30 months and under, or even better access than that, supply would be a major constraint, and we would see short ribs and short plates and these prices go even higher. But what we would see, we'd see increased values for beef tongues, we'd see significant value growth if we're able to get to that market. China's a real wild card. In the last 2 years, China opened to Argentina beef imports. They're opening to Canadian beef imports. That was a market that was very well protected, and to me it gives an indication that the Chinese government is willing to consider imports. We had talks, the U.S. had talks here 2 weeks ago. No results came out of it. Nothing publicly announced. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see something shake loose with China in the next year. So I talked about Japan, looking at the numbers here. Today in the U.S., you look at what we were shipping tongues at, I guess, 2003, let's say. tongues were going to Japan. $15 a head is what we were getting for those tongues. We've talked about this before. Today, tongues in the U.S. are $1.43 a pound. That's a major impact. If we look at what it would do just in sheer volumes to be able to ship to Japan, we're looking at $40 a head. $40 a head in increased value in the disappearance impact of moving that beef off our market, what that does to prices. We've got significant export premium potential. I would say we'll probably know when this happens, before it happens. I don't think a Japan announcement will surprise us. I think it's a very slow process in Japan to change the laws, to change the Food Safety Commission rules to get to that point. But when this happens, look out. This will not be a small deal in our markets. This is a slide I put together as we were putting our forecast together the last couple months. Randy said, hey, what happens if we're wrong on our export forecasts? I'm completely shocked that he would ever ask such a question. But stranger things have happened. And so I put this chart together to show, here's what happens if exports are up 6%, 12%, or even 18%. And what does that do based on our movement of beef off of our domestic market? So we're saying we're going to be 8%. Say we're at 12%. The jump from 12 to 18% this year would be worth about $10 a head just in the disappearance volumes off of our market. So I'm not saying we're going to be 18% up in exports this year, but I'm not saying we won't be. It's entirely possible because we're constrained by some of these access issues. It'll definitely be something to keep an eye on real close this year as we move forward. In summary, tight global supplies, increasing global demand. We've got meat inflation. We've got food inflation across the globe. That's not going to change. And when you think about it, how much of this inflation has been fueled by higher grain prices, higher commodity prices? We're not moving away, I don't think, anytime soon from our policies that are supporting these grain prices. We've got a presidential election coming up next year, moving into the Iowa area, which becomes very politically powerful. I don't think we're going to see policies change. I think we're going to have very high food inflation through 2011, well into 2012, and maybe beyond. Increasing exports and slight import growth into 2012 for the U.S. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Kevin Good. Thanks.